With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Another person I've been really looking forward to catching up with now that RCR is back on air is Farzan Irani with our Money Talk segment. It's Thursday morning and Farzan is beaming in still from overseas. Farzan, it's great to have you back. Great to talk with you again after, well, a month or so of being off air, but we are back. First of all, how do you feel about that? We asked for help. We put out the call and it turned out that people had our back.
I have to say, mate, I'm really excited, honestly. It leaves a little bit of a gap in your life when you feel like you're contributing so much to people and people appreciate it. So obviously there was a gap in there. I've been busy traveling and being overseas and all that kind of stuff, but it still feels like a gap. And I'm honestly just proud of the people who have contributed to this purpose.
Yeah,
because the whole point is everyone's realized RCR is where you're getting the information. The traditional media is dying. So why aren't we funding something that we believe in? And I think this is what I've told you. There's always light at the end of the tunnel, mate, because people are waking up. And as gradually as more people wake up, we're going to get stronger. Our side is going to get stronger as people wake up. So I'm really proud of Kiwis standing up and supporting each other and the effort of what we're trying to also do out here.
Well said. Okay, let's get into it. There's a lot to crunch through in about the next 30 minutes. I want to start off with a couple of local stories and a couple of stories from interest.co.nz. First one, and I'm reading a line out of this story. New Zealand was in the depths of recession, equal to a 3.9% decline in per capita gross domestic product that followed the global financial crisis. And reportedly, Treasury's chief economic advisor, Dominic Stevens, said that. It's a quote from him. Unpick that a bit.
Yeah, it's funny. As I said, we mentioned this 6 months, 12 months back, mate, of what is going to be happening. And that's exactly what's happening now. So what this is highlighting is pretty much everything is now hitting the front headlines of everything that we've said. New Zealand was officially in a recession already. And doesn't matter how long they try and delay telling the average people in the local media, our listeners were way ahead of this. So what the wording in there was, this is the worst since the global financial crisis. Have you mentioned that quite a few times, that this is going to be?
We have.
That this is going to be a real bad. And this person, Dominic Stevens, that he mentioned, pretty much has clearly said he's in the process of successfully downgrading its forecast ahead of the budget. So the budget, I think, is being delivered on May 30th by this new government. And I can tell you, I want to see what they say. But the whole point is, again, lipstick on a pig, so to speak. They're going to have to tidy up some numbers. Because every time they tell you, we forecast this, the forecast seems to be wrong. And that's essentially what is coming out now. As interest rates go up, borrowing and costs increase for the average people, plus the government. And that is the problem we have here.
That figure, 3.9%, I'm sure it was reported only within the last week or two that the contraction, I guess you'd call it, was a lot less than that. It seems like a huge jump. I think it was under 1% as it was reported. I might have got that wrong. You may know. But 3.9%, well, that's 4%, essentially. And we're only just kind of into this recently, aren't we? So where does it go from here? Does this decline keep piling upon itself?
Yes. But I also want to break down that sentence for you, Paul. As we always do, sometimes I try and simplify certain things because, okay, so in that sentence, it pretty much says, let's say 4%, it's 3.9, but let's say 4% decline. A couple of things I mentioned before. Firstly, this says 4% decline in per capita GDP. So what have we discussed before? It's not just a GDP decline of 4%. The problem is New Zealand has had net migration or what? I don't remember the number. Was it 40,000, 50,000 people come in?
Might even be a bit more than that now.
Actually. Yeah, I think it was 40, 50, 80, 70, something around that number. But the whole point is per capita. So obviously that contributes to it. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong. But as we mentioned before, there's inflation. So inflation, your GDP should actually, on a nominal basis, be going up, right? Because the numbers look bigger. Your insurance costs have gone up. Everything's gone up. So instead of me paying $10 for something, now I'm paying $15. So the GDP should actually grow quite a lot rather than shrink in nominal terms. Now, I don't want to go into the explanation of what nominal is and what real rates are and all that stuff. But in nominal terms, it should be growing. But this has actually gone backwards. So that's telling you a story. And that's the whole thing. There was also another article in there which actually talks about why this has happened. So it's because GST take has gone down. So Nicola Willis has come out and said the GST take has gone down. Businesses aren't making a profit. So our tax take on that end has gone up. But we'll just magically hope this is all going to improve. I don't see how this improves. I would love to ask her that in the budget announcement.
Well, another figure that came out just a few days ago, you may or may not be aware of, and maybe this has something to do with the bigger, well, it's certainly something to do with the bigger picture, but is germane to what we're talking about, is there's been a significant reduction in sheep and beef meat exports, and that's because China's buying less, North America buying a bit more, but nowhere near enough to offset. Yeah, so red meat exports for January falling to a five-year low. They dropped 8% compared to the same month last year, down to a value of 759 mil, reading from RNZ. 8% drop. That's a significant drop, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, mate. This is a global event. As everything gets, the simple thing is, if I earn 100 bucks, the first thing I have to do is pay taxes, and they don't count that in CPI, which is some commentators around the world will call it a CP lie now. It's no more realistic. It's a CP lie to suit the government agenda. And so the first thing you do is pay taxes out of, let's say, 100 bucks, 30 bucks is gone. Then you're paying your mortgage, insurances, all that stuff. What's left over? As interest rates go up, the second thing off the line, as I said, was your mortgage or your rent. So as mortgage rates have gone up and your mortgage payment has doubled or tripled, that's taken away a big chunk of your disposable income. Whatever's left over, it goes to consumption. Now, if you were eating expensive meat, you're eating cheap meat. And if you are getting rid of the Netflix accounts or something like that, the extra discretionary stuff that you did not need. So discretionary spending takes the hit first. Obviously, GDP is going to contract, right? It's just a common sense effect because your dollars can only go in so many places.
Is it too early to ask you how precarious, given that figure, nearly 4%, how precarious is the situation?
I'm downhill from here. And sorry, I'm not, I'm just saying, I'm a realistic macro analyst, and I can tell you we're going downhill from here. In fact, when I speak to some of my clients, I've told them America was the only country who was saying, oh, look, our economy is doing so great. We're not in a recession, this, that. I can tell you now, we essentially, even America has had their first quarter of economic decline. As of May, June, America will also be in a decline. What happens over the next 3 or 4 years? I'm happy to say this on the radio. We go into stagflation now. What that means is essentially all economies globally will have the economic growth slowing down and inflationary pressures persisting, which means when they tell you inflation was coming down, inflation was coming down, inflation won't be coming down, inflation will go higher, because not only do we have shortages because of these stupid things happening in the Middle East and all of that, and the ships coming around and all that stuff, but if there's a global war, which we know is being instigated on all fronts between Russia, Ukraine, and NATO countries and Europe, we have inflation. War is inflationary. So we have inflation, economies will slow down, and that's the problem we have. In fact, I can already tell you in New Zealand this is happening, because I'll just open one article which I have in front of me. This is about the government revenues tracking 1.6 billion below forecast as budget 2024 approaches. So what are the two or three things they're talking about? Treasury said this was largely due to a 1.7 billion drop in corporate taxes, as economic conditions have reduced taxable profits. I already told you that, right? As businesses suffer, they make fewer profits. Now they have to lay off people. So they've also common sense thing is layoffs have gone up as well. There's 30,000 more people who have been laid off. There's also underemployment in the economy that we've already spoken about. And in this article, what they talk about is GST as well. Goods and services tax revenue is $300 million below forecast. So what happens when an economy slows down? Everything slows down, which means people make less profits. There's more less turnover of money exchanging hands because I'm sitting at home instead of going drinking out or taking a weekend away and all of that. So economic activity slows down, which means the government's take slows down. So the government gets less taxes, and now their budget goes into a bigger deficit because my income's gone down, but my expenses remain the same. And Nicola Willis is saying in this budget, we're going to have to make some cuts, which again, I've told people, see where the cuts are coming, okay? Because they made promises they cannot keep. The tax revenue is going down, New Zealand's in recession, people are losing jobs. This has a flow-on effect, which means we go into stagflation. People are already losing jobs and people are feeling it. That's the real economy.
But at the same time, I note that ASB yesterday dropped its fixed home lending rates following the recent ANZ reductions. They've dropped it by 10 basis points. So that sounds like some kind of easing.
Yes, it does, mate. I'm going out tomorrow and applying for a home loan because it's 10 basis points. What you got to understand was about 4 or 5 months back, they were saying 2024, we're going to have rate cuts. The RBNZ has done enough damage. In fact, I think you'd interview someone from Squirrel Mortgages who said, this is enough. It's hurting people. Look, they should drop interest rates. I would ask people to think back what I had said. They will not drop interest rates because inflation is their excuse to keep increasing interest rates, right? Now, you talk about this article. So at that stage, all the bank economists were saying, oh, we have 4, 5, 6 interest rates coming this year. So everything's going to get better and people are going to feel less stress. What have they reduced it by? ASB and ANZ? 10 basis points. 10 basis points is 10 points of a percentage. It's hardly anything. Okay. So if I'm looking at ASB, their 1 year rate has gone down literally from 7.14. It is 7.14, so it's gone down from 7.24 to 7.14. Woohoo, okay? On $1 million mortgage.
Woohoo, yeah.
What are you saving? And the other rate they've changed is a 4-year rate. So it's down to 6.49. Tell me what's the big thing to celebrate here, right? And as I said, there'll be these little twinkles on the top because they want to lock in people in the long term. And there's data out there that New Zealanders still think there's a rate cut coming. Okay. For transparency purposes, I'll clearly say out there, maybe all reserve banks around the world might, as a shock, get us into one more cut, okay? But it won't be like a 1% drop. So if New Zealand's sitting at 5.5, New Zealand might go to 5.25, very rare chance. But the Reserve Bank of New Zealand itself has said, we're not going to reduce rates till, I think, November next year, okay? Because inflation is persisting. Now they've openly come out and said, right? Because first they were saying inflation was going down. Yeah, it's right on track. And I told you, it could be right on track. They ain't going to reduce interest rates because inflation comes back with a vengeance this time. And I can tell you with a vengeance. So they're going to have to increase interest rates. So a person who's locked in, or even if they aren't locked in, I'm big poo-poo. Because if they're locked in for 4 years right now and they take the 6.49 that ASB has given them, at least they have certainty of what they're going to pay for the next 4 years and revisit this in 4 years' time if they can afford it. But if they were at 2% and now they have to jump to 6.49, can most of them afford it? 3 times the disposable mortgage payments?
I'm just wondering, just sorry to jump in, but okay, I think you said November next year, so that's what, 2025 they anticipate a drop, or November this year?
Yeah, because first they said maybe in 2024, mid-2024, now they've gone out to 2025. So the whole point is they're going to kick the can down the road and they're going to say, oh, look, it's coming, but we just have to look for inflation.
But it doesn't kick the can down the road. And sorry, I'm just simple, dumb guy, as I keep saying on the street, don't know too much about this sort of thing. I've learned a lot from you, Farzan, I can tell you. But I guess the real downside of a high interest rate regime is the job losses. You've just touched on that already. Now, if you're looking ahead to 2025, that rate of joblessness could accelerate way more than it has now. I don't think we can tolerate that, can we?
No, we can't. And that's what I'm saying. This is only the start, right? It's only interest rates kicking in now. These are businesses who are not making. So again, let's slow down. The whole economy is one GDP. It's everything circling around, money's flowing through. As people are spending less, businesses are receiving less top-line revenue, but they have fixed costs and they have variable costs. And one of the variable costs for them was also, well, I don't know if you want to put a mortgage payment or a loan payment into a variable or fixed cost, but as their mortgage payments go up on their debt, not mortgage, but their commercial property debt or their business debt, all that stuff go up, their bottom line is getting scantier and scantier, and the profits are getting smaller and smaller. Now, what do I do if I want to save my business? I have to lay off staff. As I lay off staff, those people are now looking for jobs, competing for other jobs. Now, there's fewer people spending money because now I've told my neighbor I just lost my job and I'm looking for a job. Now, he's careful because he might be next. And this has a flow-on effect constantly in the economy as people get more and more concerned that they could be next. They say it's a recession when your neighbor loses the job. It's a depression when you lose your job as well. Okay. So this is the unfortunate thing. I'm not saying everyone's going to lose jobs, but there's enough data out there to tell you the government's taking in less money from corporate businesses. Their GST is coming down. Okay. There was another article. I just want to bring this up because when we're talking about these interest rates and stuff and something that we've spoken about, ANZ actually has come out and they said their profit has seen a 4% rise. But the best part we want to look at is what the CEO of ANZ is actually telling us. So I just want to read a couple of things there. The bank's half-year credit impairment charge, which I've told you, is where they started reporting it. Impairment is where they put it aside saying this could go bad. It actually fell, right? So some businesses, I told you, remember the Japanese bank, on its results, it had to report what it was. So for ANZ, the credit impairment charge fell by 88 million to 33 million, and they had kept it at 121. Now comes the fun part. However, it increased total credit impairment provisions, so they've not reported it on this one. What's put aside for potential bad debts by another 13 million to 870 million. So their credit impairment provisions have actually gone up. And
say that again. That's a range that you just mentioned there. So 30 million or 33 million to potentially 800 million. Did I hear you right?
Yeah. So the half-year credit impairment. This is just a half-year. So half-year impairment charge fell 88 million. So they've kind of written off 33 million. An impairment charge is different to an impairment provision. An impairment charge is where they've already taken the hit on their books. So they were hoping. They were prepared to take an $88 million hit. They took a $33 million hit. However, they increased total credit impairment provisions. So what they did was they took a small hit, but their provisions are now up to $870 million. And this is what she says. Given the more challenging environment we are in, we do need to remain cautious. The number of customers falling behind on their repayments is rising. So ANZ, New Zealand unit loans at 90 days past due rose 18% across the half year. Okay. These are mortgages that are 90 days past due has risen 18% in half a year, in 6 months.
Okay.
So yep. They're clearly telling you this. And it says ANZ has reached out to over 200,000 homeowners to offer extra support. Okay.
And what does extra support mean? I've never been in this situation.
You what this is, mate. This is like, let us help you. Can you afford to make it? Should we extend and pretend? So if you had 20 years to run and you were paying it at 3% and now the interest rates are 7%, let us redocument it over 30 years again so your mortgage payment becomes smaller. Remember I told you extend and pretend? So yeah. Instead of me paying, I was paying 500 and now my fixed rate has come up. I'm sitting with the ANZ guy and my payment's going to be $1,200 a week. I can't afford it. So,
yeah, but someone like me who's 60 years old, there's no way that they give me an extra.
No, technically they're not supposed
because they might think I might be in the ground by then.
Exactly, you know? Right. Exactly, right.
And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
Lot of people, but the whole point is they know they can sell it at the end, right? So what do you think reverse mortgages are? Heartland Bank in New Zealand and Australia is one of the big players in the reverse mortgages. So what do they do with 65-year-olds? They pretty much loan sharks, if I'm being honest, because they're giving a 60 or 65-year-old who has a $1 million property a $200,000 loan saying, you know what? Don't spend the last few sunsetting years of your life, just sitting at home and
go on a cruise. Nothing.
Yeah, go on a cruise, have a holiday, give your grandchildren money to buy cars and this and that, and be the great grandparent that you are. Take $200,000 from us. We know you've got a $1 million house, even with interest. 5 years, you don't even have to pay us interest. Don't have to pay us any principal. So 65-year-old is really not paying you anything, because they cap it at a certain amount. So with interest, they'll know it'll go get to a maximum by the time you die to 400. Great. When you die, your kids already know that this mortgage has been reverse mortgage. This property has been reverse mortgage. We'll take our 400. The rest can go to your estate and they can live off whatever. This is shark lending. This is what happens, right, with reverse mortgages, because technically a 65-year-old shouldn't be getting a big mortgage. And that is why there's only certain banks, even in Australia and New Zealand, who will touch that product, because it is not the ethical thing to do.
Well, one thing that I think makes people very grumpy is when they hear of rising bank profits, especially in a time where it feels like personal wealth is being, you know, siphoned away from you, let's say, due to economic conditions. How do they keep making rises in profit if, you know, things aren't in good shape? And how long can that go on? Because people really don't like that. They're very grumpy about that. They're getting hounded, pounded, whatever, by the banks ultimately. I mean, they might be friendly for a while, but in the end, they're not friendly. And yet their profits... ANZ, as you mentioned, have reported a profit rise, interim profit rise, despite everything else. How does that come about? Are they overcharging, or is there enough increased activity somewhere to increase that profit? How does it work? Or is that just the margins on interest rates when they go up that they literally make more profits?
Yeah, you got it. That is it. So as I mentioned before, when interest rates are really low, bank margins are actually shrinking.
How could the Reserve Bank, who you'd think would have some sort of feeling of support for New Zealanders, how could they engineer a situation where out of their interest rate settings, killing employment, yet giving a kind of a gift to the bank? How can that be the right thing to do?
Well, you misunderstand the reason why a Reserve Bank is there, mate. You think it's there to help New Zealanders? Really?
People would think that. You know, they wouldn't think that they were kind of there to make it more difficult.
Exactly. As I've told you from the start, it's for given them, an official
But it seems
name.
That the banks are favored over the citizens.
It's called the Reserve Bank of New Zealand to make it sound like an official name. Like the Federal Bank, Federal Reserve of America, right? There's nothing federal about it. It's a private organization. If people only understood how banking and central banking works, the central bank is not here to help you. Okay, I can't say much on this on the radio because there have been problems for people who actually say it out loud.
Criticize,
is literally is, okay? They're not here to help New Zealanders, mate. They're here to help the banks. So have you seen in the global financial crisis as well, the government and the central bank comes to help the banks? What did we say about the banking system? The bank is a leech on society because, well, they kind of help, but that's how the banking system is set up. But they only have 10 cents of every dollar that they lend out. So when you're saying they're still making a profit, of course, because 90% of the money doesn't exist. So when ANZ lends money, they're lending money that they don't even have. It's magical money, click money.
So the profits they're making are kind of made off
fictional money.
Oh, God.
Monopoly money. But you'll always see in these articles, right? So I want to read this in at the bottom of this article. So it says, where does ANZ make its money from? It says, because it makes the difference, the net interest margin is the difference between what the bank borrows money at through the likes of deposits and what it lends it out at. For in New Zealand, it's making 2.56 down from 2.67. So what it's trying to tell people is, let's say I'm giving you a 4% on a term deposit, but the margin, which is 2.56, so my mortgage is, I'm lending it out at 6.56. Look, that's where I must be making my profit. But as I've just told you, that's only the 10%. The other 90% doesn't exist.
Wow.
But this is misdirection, right? This is saying if they're giving 4% on deposits and they're lending at 6.56 on home loans, that's where they made their profit. Okay, let's be honest. If they're really making 2.56 on their entire book multiplied after they paid their leases, their shareholder salary payments, their staff salaries, would they be making such a big profit? No, because 90% of the money doesn't even exist. So when they're lending you 6.56, on 90% that they don't even have to pay a 4% on, that's pure profit. You take that away and you're gone.
I think I understand now.
Now you understand. So they're making 6.56 on money that doesn't even exist. They don't even have to pay 4% for the depositors. And this is the funding business model for all banks around the world. And I just want to clarify, central banks are not here to help New Zealand, okay? Central banks are here to provide liquidity to banks during the global financial crisis as well. Or last year, when in America, three banks collapsed, the central bank came in and set up a BTFP because they need this system to have confidence. If people do bank runs and withdraw money, the whole system collapses.
Because within... there's only 10% of real money to give back.
Exactly, exactly. And First Republic, I think, failed last year, one of the bigger ones. You know what happened about a week and a half back? This is a mockery of the... They're either mocking us. So last year, there was First Republic. This year, Republic First collapsed. There will be more bank failures coming this year in America already. There's a report out there. I don't remember the consultancy firm that actually did it. And they said there's 282 banks in America which are at risk of collapsing. Okay, but they won't name the banks because they know the minute they name the banks, people will go and rush and take the money out. Right. As I've told you, the whole system
boys, is a house of cards.
It could it's a house down. Of cards because they're only 10%.
Let me get this right again, dumb guy on the street. I go, let's say I'm successful, get a mortgage, yeah. And I get lent some money. When it comes down to it, 90% of what I borrow off them isn't real.
Yeah.
As far as they're concerned, anyway, it is to me because I owe it. And they can take my assets,
real to you.
Fixed
exactly.
Assets to pay that back. But actually, they didn't really lend me, I mean, 10% is pretty low. They really didn't lend me anything as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, because they didn't have it in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Is that the logic?
They don't have it in the first place. I think we've mentioned this.
Wow. Okay, I know we've talked about it before, but, you know, yeah. Okay, so you can see how everything can teeter-totter on the edge. So maintaining confidence at all costs is what they have to do. Am I right?
Exactly right.
Because if that goes, it all falls over, right?
It all falls over. Exactly. Ooh. Right. The whole thing is a confidence game. Okay, let's break. It's good you brought up this word. What's the word confidence? It's a con, okay?
Yeah.
Why do they call it a Ponzi scheme? You need more fools to keep buying in, and when you run out of buyers, the system collapses, that scheme collapses, right? Whether it was Bernie Madoff or whatever it was, banking, central banking, is the biggest Ponzi scheme ever perpetrated on human beings, mate. And even the taxation system, as we speak, is the biggest Ponzi scheme. Because if governments can just print money out of thin air, why do they bloody tax us? Has anyone asked that question? Why do we pay tax?
What's the answer to that?
Again, as I said, central banking was created to get people into debt, people and countries in debt. Do you understand?
Yep.
Because if New Zealand government just issued their own currency, why does the New Zealand government need to say central bank, which is a private organization, mask click money and lend it to the New Zealand government so I can spend it in my own economy because it's a debt system. So now this is what I'm saying. Everyone needs to read the book on central banking called The Creature from Jekyll Island. So central banking was created to lend money to governments because the governments can then tax their citizens and pay their debt back. But why do they need to tax the citizens when we're seeing right now in America, they're just creating billions and billions and billions and handing off to Ukraine. Why is a citizen paying for this? And if they could just create magical money, why are we being taxed?
Well, we've given $100 million to Ukraine without any accountability, no line item at all. I asked the foreign minister what the money's being used for, and he couldn't tell me.
As taxpaying citizens, were we asked if we want $100 million, $100 billion, or whatever they're going to give to Ukraine? Or should, you know, like the prime minister says,
absolutely.
Are we going to... Exactly. Why don't we get asked? This is our taxpayer money.
I think we're idiots. That's why.
But most people are, because we don't know where taxes are going. We don't understand. When the government promises you something, it's coming from somewhere. It's not magical money. You have to pay taxes. Now, people, as I told you, I think we discussed this last time, taxes aren't going up. In fact, Nicola's come out and said, we're looking at tax cuts and property tax cuts and all of that. But you're paying more in GST. You're paying more with inflation. You're paying more through insurances.
I was talking to someone the other day who's had a $13,000 annual rate rise.
Man, it's not just that. House prices and house building costs are going up. I was reading an article somewhere the other day saying house prices, the building costs has gone up. And in that it says actually in the last 30 years, the size of housing has actually gone down. So I just taken a note there. House building costs were up 21.6% from 2695 per square meter to 3276 per square meter.
Wow, okay.
And the problem is the house is actually getting smaller.
Okay. Is that stagflation?
Well, now it's stagflation, but this has played out a long time as well.
Physical,
it is. Everything's going to decline. Everything's going to decline because as the economy slows down, now are you going and betting $1 million in a house on a beachfront thinking I might get 1.2 million in 5 years? No, the whole thing is reversed.
Well, they might actually ship you off, mate, with managed retreat.
Or not just that. I read something in Spain. You know, the Spain government's actually come out and I know we're going off New Zealand, but the Spanish government has actually come out and they passed the legislation. This is your whole World Economic Forum, climate agenda, all of that. Because of rising sea levels, they're so concerned that they're going to actually confiscate people's properties that are on the beachfront in Spain.
Yeah.
Okay. No reimbursement. They'd given you, so in hindsight, so let's say you bought a building or an apartment in a building on a beachfront because there's Europeans who want to retire in Spain and Catalina and stuff like that. And now what has happened is they said, when this runs out, we're just going to break down the building. We're going to demolish the building and it's for your own safety. Do Kiwis actually resonate with this where there were floods on certain places and now the government says we'll buy the property off you? Can you connect dots out here to see what was actually happening and why they're doing this? So they can just steal your property, give you no reimbursement because you have a property on the beach. With rising sea levels, they're protecting you guys.
It's kind of the same thing as the 90% versus 10% on what is real money because there is no perceptible increase in sea level.
There isn't. The whole thing is a lie. The whole thing is there. No, there's no climate change. Oh. This is what I said. They used to call it global warming and they call it climate change because now we can go either way, right? So the whole thing is a lie. The scientist, there's award-winning and Nobel Prize-winning scientists are saying climate change and human activity has no impact on this. And they're still continuing. And that's why you're seeing riots in Europe and stuff. People are waking up, man. They know. The whole thing is a shamble. Just like COVID was a lie, this is a lie, and people are waking up quickly. I think the CBDC and the banking will be the straw that breaks the camel back because now people say, yeah, screw your government. We know you're lying all along. But when we're talking about interest rates and we're just talking about central bank, there's something I'd read somewhere. When the U.S. Congress, you know, there was no taxation in America before the Federal Reserve was set up. So the Federal Reserve was set up as a central bank, and that is when Congress was given the authority. So taxation was brought in by the U.S. Congress, and it was at 7%. Okay, so as I've told you before, they introduced something nice and slow and easy, so you don't think there's a problem with that. U.S. Congress was allowed to tax people at 7%, which continued until 1921 from 1913, okay? Just they were allowed to tax, and then the central bank was set up. In 2024, the top marginal rate, California is a very good example, 57.9%.
Wow, gee.
Okay, so you take state taxes and federal taxes, and this is what is happening. Do you know in America, the U.S. and Canada both announced capital gains taxes. So capital gains tax, because the government is spending openly, and now they're going to say, we're going after the rich, guys. Look, we're going after the rich. Hunting down the rich becomes kind of an excuse to eliminate the middle class. And their capital gains tax, Joe Biden has just announced, it hasn't been passed yet, 44.6%. I think Trudeau has gone into the 60s, 65, 67%. So if you make a profit, if you're smart enough to invest your money and make a capital gain on a good investment, they want to take 60% of it from you.
Why would you do that?
Why would you then even bother? You just wouldn't bother, right? So this is what stifles innovation. People sit at home, and so why would I take the risk into the economy and try and start a business and all of that? And now do you see how we go towards socialism?
So we get to, let's say, next year, interest rates have forced a contraction in employment. People are poorer. All those tax takes go down. Something's got to give. What will it be?
The government will print more money, get deeper in debt.
But that would then devalue it, wouldn't it?
Which will create more inflation. Let me explain this simple thing, okay?
Here's a big question. This is what I'm thinking now. Should we dispense with the Reserve Bank?
Well, what do you think Argentina is trying to do? It won't happen overnight, mate. People have gone down. Gaddafi. And
well, he wanted to create a new currency, didn't he?
Yeah, and why did we don't want central bank money, right? What happened? His country was invaded and he was killed. So the same thing happened to Osama, not Osama, what is the Iraq guy?
Saddam.
Saddam Hussein, same thing, right? So this is not childish stuff, man. This is big, big, big stuff. But what's happening in America right now, two things. The US dollar is the strength, which is the strength of the military-industrial complex. The U.S. Treasuries, on the other hand, which is the global reserve asset, as I've explained before, where, let's say, if China's exporting something, they hold that profit in U.S. Treasuries. So they used to buy. China's selling them like crazy right now because they know if they go to war, America will cancel and default on them. You don't pay your enemy back the money you owe them if you're going to war with them. The one thing, whether it's America or New Zealand or whatever, I just want to explain this. So they're saying inflation is going up, and that's why we've been increasing interest rates. They said, look, it's right on track. As inflation starts coming down, we promise we will slow down or we will reduce interest rates. Inflation isn't going to go down. So what happens now? They keep raising rates because I've told you there's war, there's shortages. Inflation ain't going to go down. So when they rate, they only have one or two options. They can either raise rates or they can cut rates. So I'm just going to slow this down. If they raise rates, it breaks the stock market. It breaks the bond market because, as I said, as interest rates go up, bond values collapse. Mortgages default. The economy slows down. So the economy breaks. With your stocks, bonds, and mortgages collapsing, which could also impact your bank, and your bank could collapse. So they keep on this. They keep on this. They're in big trouble. Okay? Now, let's say they cut rates. If they cut rates and they create more money in the economy and is being spent in the economy, we have more inflation anyways, on top of inflation. They're screwed either ways. Sorry for that word. Cut it out if you want. They're in trouble anyways.
Yeah.
So whether they cut rates or whether they raise rates, and the problem, as I've said, is for 40 years, people are accustomed to really low interest rates. It's like a drug addict and he needs that hit, right?
Yeah,
we need cheap
fix.
Money.
Yeah.
It's only been 2 years of interest rate rises. And the wheels are wobbling and coming off.
Oh, yeah, that's a good economy. Point. It's a very short period of time, exactly.
Yeah, so for 40 years, we've had reducing interest rates, and everything was hunky-dory, and people were just betting all their chips on housing and this and that. Now what happens, and this is only the start, it's only 2 years. And if inflation's going to go up, which means interest rates are going to go up, stocks, bonds collapse, as I've just told you, people get laid off, and you can't service your debt. So banks are in trouble now because they don't have 90% of the Fugazi, magical monopoly money. So when people start writing off these loans, their balance sheet starts drawing down because that money didn't really exist. So they have to write down these losses. Even though it was magical, the magical money starts disappearing, which then creates more deflation, more slowdown. So either way, it's screwed. So all I'm just trying to say, mate, is I'm not predicting the future. I'm just telling you, if it goes up, this happens. If it goes down, this happens. Either way, we Goldilocks, stagflation, people lose jobs.
We've had a good chat here, Farzan. The clock is against us. And so good to catch up. I think people kind of get a view of the mix of stories we've talked about and your explanation across those points. You know, when you've got 90% of money not actually being real, that's a big problem, it seems to me. But thanks for coming back in, Farzan. It's great to catch up with you again. We're back on air, and we'll be back with you in a week.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's always a pleasure. Anyone wants to reach out, get more information on what's really happening to protect their wealth, reach out at successsimplified.life.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.